Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
This is Discovery from the BBC, and I'm Gaia Vince. Welcome to the Anthropocene, the Age of Man. One of the greatest issues of our time is climate change. We're warming the planet, and it's a huge concern now. But how significant will this global change be from the billion-year perspective of geological time? Is our reliance on fossil fuels adding a new chapter to the Earth's history?
If we take the body of evidence out there on that global scale, we actually have entered a new geological era, and the main driver for that change is human activity.
Geologists divide up Earth history into periods and epochs with names like the Jurassic, the Cretaceous, and the Eocene. Often these geological chapters were triggered by some sort of global shift in climate, atmospheric transformations which etched themselves in the rocks that were forming on the ancient sea floors. Are we doing something as dramatic for geologists of the far, far future to document, writing our chapter, the Anthropocene?
I think that the human imprint on this planet will be very easy for future geologists to see. Will be a very obvious layer in the marine sediments.
So what evidence will we leave behind of our human-caused climate change? And what can the deep past teach us about what we should expect as we continue our great global warming experiment? In some places where rock has been exposed, the past can be easily seen. I went with geologist Jan Zalashevich to a railway cutting in the soggy English countryside a short drive from his base at the University of Leicester. He showed me a special section of rock layers that documents a global event many millions of years ago when this part of Europe was covered in a tropical sea.
Well, these strata in this railway cutting show the difference really between life and death on the seafloor. There's a bottom layer of strata, which is a limestone, and it's just full of fossils of creatures which live on the seafloor, shells, mollusks, things like that. A living community. And just above that, and the contact is almost knife sharp, there are black shales. And the black shales show that the seafloor here was effectively dead. It was stagnant, it had no oxygen, and all of the life you find is the fossil life that lived in the high waters above, in the sunlit waters above, and when they died they simply fell onto this stagnant seafloor.
And this very obvious stripe between this yellower sandstone to this dark colour, if you look at that, what does it mean to you as a geologist?
The change from the yellowish limestone to the black shales above is something that has become rather closely studied in the last few years, because it seems to mark a fossil global warming event. When, from somewhere in the Earth, something of the order of maybe 2 or 3 or 4 trillion tonnes of carbon were released, and that warmed the Earth by about 5 to 7 degrees centigrade, more at the poles, less at the equator. And that caused a number of things to happen. One is that large parts of the ocean ran out of oxygen as the waters became warmer, and there was something around the world of what's called an anoxic event. So the seafloor died in that sense.
So there was this big temperature change, a global warming event. And how many millions of years ago was this?
A little bit over 180 million years ago. And geologists now call it the Tuwashan event, after the Tuwashan age, which represents it in the rock strata. It appears to have changed life around the world, so some creatures became extinct. It caused sea level to rise. One of the reasons scientists find it important to look at it is because we may now be at the beginning of forming a hypothermal event of our own in the present-day world because of fossil fuel burning and the greenhouse effect.
As Jan says, we're not yet at the stage of a Tuwashan-scale event, but things are definitely warming up, particularly in the Arctic.
Yeah, it's a little bit frightening to see how quickly it's changing.
Gifford Miller at the Institute for Arctic and Alpine Research in Boulder, Colorado, is looking at how today's rapid changes in the Arctic compare to what happened in the distant past.
A core question is, how do you decide whether it's really unusual? When is it unprecedented? When is it still within the range of natural variability? And so for the last 5 or 6 years, that's more or less been the thrust of my own research, to provide quantitative metrics by which we can evaluate the nature of the modern warming. And what we're seeing now is a rapidly accumulating volume of secure data that shows that the present warming is probably the warmest it's been in some few tens of thousands of years, which makes it really way outside the range of natural variability. I think if we take the body of evidence out there on that global scale, which is what's required, that it's pretty fair to say that we actually have entered a new geological era, and the main driver for that change is human activity.
Gifford Miller's colleague, Jim White, agrees. He says that warming at both poles means that in the Anthropocene, there'll be a global rise in sea level.
What's more complicated is how rapidly that can occur. And that's where a lot of research is going on today. How rapidly can Greenland shed ice to the ocean? How rapidly can West Antarctica shed ice to the ocean? Sea level's rising now, and it will continue to rise in the future. And not by small amounts, but by probably meters, just given the level of CO2 and methane and other greenhouse gases we have in the atmosphere today. There are billions of people who are vulnerable to a sea level rise of a meter. And a sea level rise of a meter is what is currently conservatively predicted for the end of this century. And it won't stop there. If you ask yourself the simple question, what was the planet like when we had 400 parts per million CO2, which we're about at today, sea level was 20 meters higher. And 1 meter would render cities like Miami here in the U.S. inoperable.
But travelling far further into the future, what evidence of this rapid climate change would be decipherable in the rock record? Because if the Anthropocene really is a new geological period, it has to be judged on that basis. To do this, geologists millions of years from now might well take long slices or cores of sediment from the deep ocean floor. In the temperature-controlled core repository at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory in New York, Maureen Ramo pulls out one of the 20,000 slices of ocean sediments she's been studying.
The ocean's like a big, huge, quiet basin. All the plankton that lives in the surface ocean, when it dies, it all falls to the bottom of the ocean. And so all that sediment just accumulates layer by layer by layer by layer.
The light brown sediment core Maureen shows me is composed of tiny dust and clay particles blown into the sea from distant continents and of minute specks of the mineral calcium carbonate, once the homes of planktonic organisms.
Thousands and thousands of planktonic microfossils. And imagine these fossils look exactly like a big shell you'd find on a beach, except they're the size of a grain of sand. And when they made those shells out of the water they lived in, they used the atoms that were in the water. And so basically it's a snapshot of the chemistry of the water at those times. Every core is a record of basically a tape recorder of everything that happened in the water column above that core location, thousands to millions of years in the past. What the sea surface temperatures were, how much CO2 was in the water, you know, the amount of information is really phenomenal.
So you can look back and you can see when a geological age changed from one to another.
Yes. Like, for instance, when we went from an ice age to the current warm period. In fact, I can show you that. We put out some cores here. It's really cool to see.
I would love to see that. Let's have a look.
So now we can see the record of climate. And what do you see when you look there?
I notice different colours.
Right. It's like dark periods and light periods.
So what we're looking at here, this colour change between this grey to the beigey brown, is actually the difference between an ice age and a big melt.
The warm Holocene within which human civilization has flourished.
And now, what scientists are saying is a similar change that happened at the beginning of the Holocene, about 10,000 years ago, is starting to happen now, and they're calling it the Age of Man, the Anthropocene.
Yes.
And are you seeing changes in the sediments?
There are sediments in certain regions that accumulate very rapidly.
And if you go in the top parts of those cores, you could sample, for instance, microfossils and measure their carbon isotope ratio, the kind of carbon that is used to make their shell. And you can see that that carbon has the isotopic signature of all the fossil fuels that we've been burning for 200 years that is now released to the atmosphere and being absorbed by the ocean. So we can see the signature of human activities in the top of these cores.
So carbon, which is an all-organic matter, which we burn, comes in two different types, two different isotopes. And because we've burnt so much in fossil fuels...
The light isotope, right.
These little creatures that build shells from carbon dioxide dissolved in the water are actually starting to show a change in the type of carbon that they're building their shells with. And you're already seeing that.
Yeah, that is correct. And it's very obvious in those records.
If a geologist was to come back and have a look at the time that we're standing in now, they'd be able to see a very clear line.
Absolutely. It'd be obvious. It'd be obvious in the geochemistry of the microfossils. It would probably be obvious in the color, because right now, as we put more and more CO2 into the atmosphere, it's going in the ocean too, and it's making the ocean more acidic.
In a neighbouring lab, marine biologist and geochemist Berbel Hunisch works on this topic. Ocean acidification has also happened in the geological past, when natural events released billions of tons of carbon dioxide and methane into the atmosphere. Earlier this year, Berbel published new research comparing previous episodes to the modern-day one.
When we're talking about ocean acidification, what happens with the carbon dioxide is that it dissolves in the water and reacts with the water, and it forms a weak acid. And this acid is what accumulates in the water and makes it more acidic.
How great is this change?
So over the past about 100 years, we have seen that seawater acidity has increased by 30%. The rate of acidification today is much, much faster than it was ever in the past. So it's actually very significant.
And it's worrying, because coral reefs, the ocean's most diverse and economically important ecosystems, are faced with devastation, if not extinction. As the waters get more acidic, they dissolve the calcium carbonate that makes up coral skeletons. Ken Caldera at the Department of Global Ecology at the Carnegie Institute of Science.
We've estimated that perhaps one-third of coral reefs are already not sustainable just due to the acidification that's already happened, and that if we continue current patterns of emissions, there'll be no place left in the ocean that can sustain coral reefs by the middle of this century.
Wow, that's so soon.
Yeah, you know, it used to be the middle of the century sounded a long time ago, but it's, you know, not even four decades from now. The changes that are happening today are really extreme.
So a defining feature of the Anthropocene in the far future will be that fossil corals are extremely rare or missing completely from the geological record. Back in the core lab, Maureen Ramo suggests another marker for the Anthropocene. Her plankton shells will also dissolve away.
As the ocean becomes more acidic, it will dissolve more of the microfossils on the seafloor. People are already studying that in the surface ocean. It will gradually be transmitted throughout the ocean. And it's likely that that will leave an imprint on the sediment record through the dissolution of the carbonate microfossils on the seafloor. And so you might expect to see a layer that's darker rather than lighter. The microfossils are generally white.
So it would be dark because all you've got is the mud left.
Right. There's times in the past where massive injections of CO2 to the ocean through natural processes have made the ocean so acidic that all the microfossils dissolve in that layer and you have a dark layer.
So the geologists standing here in the future would have a look at their core sample. They would see dark to light when the Holocene starts. Then they'd see it turning with a stripe to the dark again because
that's
of ocean acidification.
Yep.
And that would be the beginning of the Anthropocene.
Well, I think the Anthropocene's already begun.
According to Berbel Hunisch, the acidification of the distant past that's most similar to what's happening today occurred at a time when giant predatory birds stalked the prehistoric world and horses were the size of poodles. It was accompanied by a dramatic warming of the planet and marks the official boundary between two epochs, the Paleocene and the Eocene.
and that is an event that took place about 56 million years ago. Global temperatures increased by about 4 to 8 degrees Celsius worldwide, and the thought is that there was a lot of carbon dioxide that entered the atmosphere.
Where all those greenhouse gases came from, no one's certain. Geochemical clues suggest that some 4,500 gigatons, that's 4.5 thousand billion tons of carbon, entered the system. Its release took place over at least 5,000 years. Ultimately, our fossil fuel burning in the Anthropocene may put less total carbon into the atmosphere and oceans, but it's happening over just a few centuries. And that, says Ken Caldera, is important.
In this Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum, which is often cited as an analog for what we're doing today, it's thought that the emission rates at that time were maybe a half or perhaps 1 gigaton per year. Today, we're emitting around 10 gigatons of carbon into the atmosphere each year. And so what we're doing today is, you know, 10 or 20 times more extreme than what happened in the Paleocene. And the Paleocene event caused the biggest extinction of creatures that lived on the seafloor in the last 60 million years. And so, you know, what we're doing is really unusual geologically. You really have to go to the big mass extinction events in Earth history to find anything comparable.
In the next part of this BBC series, I'll be looking at how the extinction of animal and plant species may come to define the Anthropocene in the same way that climate change will. But I'll leave the last word to Gifford Miller. He says that ultimately the Anthropocene climate might not be so terrible, but the getting there poses great danger for us.
If we look back in the past, when did we have the CO2 levels similar to where we think we're almost certainly going to end up? The most recent example of that is the mid-Pliocene, which is about 4 million years ago. And under those conditions, you know, there were forests all the way to the Arctic Ocean over all land masses. There was no Greenland ice cap. Sea level was 25 meters higher. So it gives one example of a very real world that we can reconstruct pretty well of where we might be heading. If suddenly we were in the Pliocene and we didn't have the infrastructure in place, it was a new planet we went to, we'd be happy living there. And the real challenge then is the time between here and then, how fast is that going to be? If you have to move New York City in 200 years, you can do it. If you have to move it in 10 years, you can't. So that's the rate of change question.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.